Blog Talk Radio.
Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman vs. MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Connecticut.
Oh boy. Hello, how you doing today? I hope I find you feeling healthy on this Thursday, September 2nd. This is Dave here with Nate. Nate, how you doing?
Hello, Dave. It is great to be back after a week away. Looking forward to talking some baseball, and we are coming into the home stretch. September means the season's almost done. Keep an eye on those playoff races, baby.
Oh, boy, and it is coming all right. I can't believe, Nate, it's September. It's September 2nd. The season ends on October 3rd, so we are through the We're through the stretch. We always go back and forth with some of our callers on the dog days, but we're getting there, man. I was just taking a quick look. A lot of these teams, no team right now has more than 30 games remaining, which it's pretty amazing. I went to a site that I like a lot, Tankathon.com, and remaining schedule strength. Was where I went, and right now you have teams like I hate to do this to you. You got the Padres with the toughest schedule left on the season. Arizona, St. Louis, Detroit, Oakland, Colorado, Milwaukee, and then Baltimore with the eighth toughest schedule remaining, with six against the Yankees, six against the Red Sox, seven against the Blue Jays, and a couple other teams out there. But oof, looking at everything, it's pretty interesting. But, Nate, I want to have you go ahead and take it away with the scores.
Okay. There are a couple of games in the books. We got a lot of games in action currently. Let's start with some final scores. The Giants down the Brewers 5-1. Take the last game of that series, break their streak. They move into a virtual tie with the Dodgers atop the NL West. Giants 85-49, Brewers 82-53. Other finals, Phillies outlast the Nationals 7-6. Not a whole lot going on there, except that the Phillies keeping in the hunt for that AL East, or the NL East, rather, divisional crown. Athletics 8-6 over the Tigers. Tigers seem to be coming back to earth. They're doing what everybody thought they would be doing. They're probably going to finish the year under 500, but they'll make it interesting. Athletics staying right in the middle of the AL wildcard hunt. They're at 74-60. Games currently in action. We got the Braves up 1-0 on the Rockies in Colorado. That is one to watch, mostly because the Rockies love to play at home. So if they can come back and beat the Rays, the Phillies could potentially move into a tie for the top of the NL East. Cleveland and Kansas City are in the third inning. Just ended. They're going to the top of the fourth. Kansas City leads that 1-0. Cleveland, another team, they're kind of hanging around in that wild card hunt. I think they're about 5.5 back. The Mets need to stay relevant in the NL East race, but that might be out of the question. They are currently tied 3-3 with the Marlins. Mets at 65-67, Marlins 55-78. So you would hope the Mets can get it done, but their recent run of play says not going to happen. Boston up 4-0 on the Rays in the top of the seventh. They are clinging to life in the AL wild card. Probably not catching the Rays for that division, though. Red Sox currently sit at 76-59, Rays 84-49. Rays got some work to do to come back and win that game, though. And Pittsburgh has decided they're just going to stay in the city of Chicago after playing on the south side and getting their head handed to them for a while. They are on the north side. They're currently leading the Cubs 3-0. The Cubs spiral continues. They are 59-75. The Pirates, the only one of the few teams that the Orioles can look at and be like, hey, maybe we can beat them if we ever play them. Pirates 48-85. Everybody else gets the night off. We have some big series coming up this weekend, though.
Feels like at this point, Nate, every series is a big series for the teams who are still in play. But I at the same time, makes you wonder who are the teams still in play. So, Nate, I have a question for you. Throughout the season, just kind of, you know, coming off the scores and looking at everything, who are three teams you think that are the most, I guess, the biggest title contenders?
Ooh, title contenders. Let's see. I guess the low-hanging fruit would be the Dodgers and the Giants, although as much as I really want the Giants to win the NL West and keep up this ridiculous run of play they've been on, I think the Dodgers probably are the better contenders. The fact that the Dodgers have run them down and made that a dead heat coming into the finish, I think the Dodgers just have more horses. The Giants are basically relying on magic and Kleenex and tissues. So let's go with the Dodgers number one. I think the White Sox at this point have to be considered legitimate title contenders. They just aren't slowing down, not that they have anybody really to challenge them. And, you know, I want to say the winner of the AL East, but I'm not sold that the Rays actually have the pitching. I think they have the offense. They're going to score enough. If they can get to their bullpen's good enough, but I just don't know where they're going to eat the innings throughout the year. And as we've covered multiple times, you just can't trust the Yankees right now. I mean, they're just winning. Yankees are just winning baseball, but we saw what they can be early on in the season. So my three title contenders, Rays, Dodgers, and the White Sox.
So I would say if you look at the season on the whole, right, I would say it's those guys who are the teams I look at and say, okay, that's who's in there. I would throw the Giants as well. But when you look at the standings, right, and I hate to say it, I got to throw the Red Sox in there. They've kind of been there all season despite their fall to a .563 winning percentage. And they still have quite a, you know, run differential, which I think you and I both disagree on how important that is or is not. I mean, Tampa's been there. Chicago doesn't really make sense that they've been there. I feel like the AL West has gone back and forth. But, you know, when I look at who's going to win a championship this year, because this is, I think, the spot where we really try to figure that out. Like, it's go time. I don't know. So let's start here. Well, you know, Nate, actually, before I jump in there, I just did want to touch on a couple of headlines that I saw that were interesting this week. Speaking of division leaders or teams that have led in their division, the Mets have been interesting lately. You know, we were out during the whole Javi Baez Francisco Lindor drama with thumbsing down the fans, which I may never understand, but that was just really weird, and that seems to have kind of gotten a little bit better. Who knows? But then they've had this whole incident with the owner tweeting whatever he's been tweeting about, and he's also – and then they had the incident where Zach Scott, the acting GM, is now on administrative leave after being arrested for a DUI in White Plains on Tuesday after he was found asleep in his car at 4:15. He wouldn't take a breathalyzer, and he was acting in a manner that police opted to give him the DUI or had to give him the DUI. Also, in crazy local news, Nate, around here in New York, in the New York tri-state area, and as far south as Maryland and really pretty far up north here, we've had a lot of flooding. And the Yankees radio broadcaster John Sterling was pulled from his car by Ricky Ricardo, the Spanish broadcaster for the Yankees. This was in Edgewater, New Jersey, by the way. And John Sterling was in his car. There were about 3 feet of water in his car on his drive home. And his co-announcer there, Susie Waldman, gave him a call and said, John, how you doing? And he goes, I'm actually not doing great. I'm drowning in my car. And she had Ricky Ricardo, who I believe had a Jeep, go out to rescue him. And at that point, Sterling was mostly submerged in water. So that was terrifying for anybody who had to hear that story. And my last headline, again, not great news. You know what? I shouldn't say not great news. It's just very interesting. But the Washington Nationals have stated that everybody in the organization, top to bottom, needs to be vaccinated. And their VP, Bob Boone, has resigned over the policy. Now, he's been with the team since 2005. So that's quite a name. It's quite a loss for the franchise. But that's certainly interesting. That's been going on. Nate, have you had a chance to skim any headlines or anything jumping out at you?
I'm going to touch on the Nationals headline that you brought up. In addition to Boone, they also had a couple of scouts that have turned in their resignation. So a team that's very clearly going into rebuild mode, and now they have lost two scouts and a VP. So that could be interesting to see how that affects them going forward. In the same vein, the Orioles have also announced that they are going to require all staff, all team staff, to be fully vaccinated. But it sounds like they're going to wait until around Halloween. So it should be end of the Major League Baseball calendar year. Some speculation. I was talking about this with a couple of my O's fans, friends. And one take that I saw is that maybe they're leaving that so that they can – so that they can potentially, you know, it doesn't look like they're saying you're fired for not getting the vaccine. Instead, they're just going to not renew contracts when the contracts run out. Other news headlines of note that I saw, you brought up Javi Baez with the thumbs down gesture. He also managed to lose a $50,000 diamond earring during a walk-off celebration. So very curious to see, you know, I just don't get how they couldn't find it. I mean, I guess I understand how they couldn't find it, but it's a funny little headline that Javi Baez just gets to keep finding himself front and center in the news, things like that. And then you touched on the Mets acting GM getting the DUI. Another element of that headline that I wanted to make sure that we brought up and touched on, he was coming from a fundraiser that was hosted at Cohen's house. So somehow the Mets just managed to put themselves front and center of every off-field issue that they possibly could. They're not playing well right now. They look like they had the NL East locked up because nobody wanted to win it. And then the Braves start coming on. The Mets start backsliding. The Phillies are somehow staying at the top of that division. And so the Mets, instead of getting better on the field, apparently they decided, oh, we're just going to, you know, let's just make ourselves the punchline and the joke like we always do. You got to love the Mets. But let's see.
So
go ahead.
One other just thing I wanted to point out, which is I would put it more in the headline category, is that the Yankees won 13 games straight and then proceeded to lose four straight, which is the first time somebody's done that in something like since the early 80s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they're a streaky team, but they do get the benefit of playing Baltimore now, so they're probably going to go back on another streak here this weekend. Assuming the games actually get played and, you know, the field's dry enough to actually get the Orioles got to get up into New York, and then the Orioles and the Yankees have to be able to get on the field in the Bronx and assume that it's dry enough to play.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, at this point, I think they still played the U.S. Open today, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. I did not see that. But that's because I don't pay close enough attention to golf.
Well, now let me ask you, Nate. So I wanted to take a quick step back. The Orioles are out. Are the Orioles actually mathematically eliminated yet?
That's a very good question. I don't know if they are.
See, I'm a Jets fan, so I always play the game of when are we mathematically out of it so I can stop worrying about it. But, you know, if you look at ESPN's current power rankings, which was released this morning at 7, you know, you do have the Orioles in 30th and the Diamondbacks and the Rangers and the Pirates. And then, boy, it's just weird to see the Cubs all the way down there to 26. And then I go up and I look at kind of the middle of the pack, your Mariners, Cardinals, Indians, those types of teams. And I don't know, Nate, it feels to me this year that more than ever, the sport is only getting top heavier with Los Angeles, San Francisco. I mean, Los Angeles and San Francisco seem like the one and one A in the NL, with the Brewers and then the Reds and the Braves behind them. But what's crazy, Nate, is once you get past the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Brewers all have 80 wins, 80-plus wins. The Dodgers and the Giants have 85. The Brewers have 82. Then the Reds have 72. That is a huge drop between your top three and then the rest of everybody. The separation is ridiculous. And then if you go over to the AL, it's definitely a little bit tighter where the Rays have 84 wins and then the Astros and the White Sox each have 78, which, by the way, I think the White Sox, having managed to hold on the whole season, really, with, you know, and with injuries, but not just they weren't just crushing injuries. They were injuries that, you know, you would think could just end a team. I mean, you have Jose Abreu, who's had an absolutely fantastic season. I mean, the guy, in a lot of ways, I think has been so consistent. Well, not consistent, but he's been there. He's been there. Yoan Moncada actually is another guy who, you know, he's got over 400 at-bats at this point, and he's kept the team, you know, afloat. And I don't think there's any one guy outside of really Abreu, Moncada, Tim Anderson. What disrespect. But it seems like a team that's been really managed well. They seem to be hitting the right things. I mean, you have, you know, that team that has no Eloy Jimenez or Luis Robert for a majority of the season. And here we sit with a month to go, and they are very much in the title picture. I don't know if I'm rooting for them. I think the La Russa drama in the middle of the season, where he, you remember when he was scolding the, you know, one of his young players who then retired. I'm saying that with air quotes.
And then, unretired.
Bad radio. Yeah, exactly. Listen, I had a bad day at job. You know, we've all been there. You have a bad day at work. I'm like, I'm never going to work again. People are one of those. That's fine. I know some people want to kill him over it. Whatever. He had his moment. But it kind of turned me off of the White Sox a little bit. But I don't know. I don't like the old school mentality, the old tough guy mentality. That's why I can't say I'm super behind that team, because you think a team is the identity of the manager. But really, the White Sox have a chance in the AL. Do you think is it just me, or do you just think the champion's going to come from whoever wins the ALCS Dodgers-Giants series? I mean, does it seem foregone almost? Is that too writing off the rest of the season?
Here, you ready for the very lawyerly answer? It depends.
Oh, please. Well, here's something for you, okay? The Giants' remaining games include 10 with the Fathers. That's a lot of games with the Padres.
Yeah. You know, here's kind of where I come down on the White Sox, and is the NL, like, do we just crown the NLCS winner, the World Series winner? I know, you know, we started this conversation off with who are your three title contenders, and I, you know, we threw some absolute shade by not mentioning the Astros, who find themselves atop the AL West because, of course, they do, and they're just there. Same with the Brewers, and, you know, the Brewers just took it to the Giants over the weekend. Well, actually, earlier this week, the Giants managed to win today 5-1 to pull back into that tie with the Dodgers. But, you know, the Brewers, they went out to the West Coast and they basically made the Dodgers' job a little bit easier, because now San Francisco's got to be looking over their shoulder the rest of the month. Whereas if San Francisco maintains that 2.5-3-game lead, three games, like, even though it's not a huge lead, it can take the better part of a week to make up that gap. It's a bigger gap than it looks like in most cases. So let's not sleep on the Brewers. Also, by the way, the Cardinals just keep hanging around and look like they might sneak into that wild card spot, because of course they will. Just so
I don't see it. I'm sorry. I don't see the Cardinals. You know what? Okay, so who's carrying the Cardinals right now? Are you going to tell me it's Adam Wainwright?
I mean, probably. I really can't tell you. I haven't been watching. I just look up at the standings, and all of a sudden, the Cardinals are 2.5 games out of the wild card.
So the Cardinals on offense are absolutely Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. Right. That's the team. That's the franchise.
Right.
I think Dylan Carlson has been a good story. The guy right now, he's got, 13 homers? I just pulled up his stats. 13 homers, 48 ribbies. That's in 449 at-bats. Good Lord, that's not great. I don't know. I don't like it. It's telling you that Tommy Edmond was a contributor to this team, and Tyler O'Neill, I guess, but he's just not one of those guys that gets out there. But where I was trying to go with this, Nate, was the pitching, right? So if I look at the pitching, right, you know, because that's what counts in the postseason. If you tell me the Cardinals are going to get in there in a one game playoff, and you put Adam Wainwright on the hill, I like that. I do have to admit, I do like that. But I just don't think there's enough behind him. I mean, your innings pitch leaders are Adam Wainwright. Then you have Kwang Hyun Kim, who I will just readily admit I don't know anything about. Carlos Martinez, Jack Flaherty. There's nobody on this roster that makes me think, okay, they can pull themselves through a series. Now, I guess what we're talking about, Nate, is can you make the playoffs? But I guess at the same time, you know, making the playoffs right now, it really seems to me like we know who's going to make the playoffs. I don't, you know, it seems pretty solid in my opinion, right? You're going to have, in the East, you're going to have the Rays. In the Central, it's going to be the White Sox.
Chicago.
In the West, it's going to be the Astros. And then in the NL, I think the NL East is pretty interesting, but it's interesting in the same way watching New York City flood yesterday was interesting. And then in the NL, I mean, it's whoever's in the NL, who cares? You know, the Central, it's the Brewers. And in the West, it's either the Dodgers or the Giants. And that, to a point, that two-man race isn't terribly interesting, because the loser's going to get into the playoff, and you just presume win it, you know? I don't know. I hate to say it, but it's not terribly intriguing until you look forward and you really start to picture what are those matchups that are going to be there.
You know, I both love and hate what Major League Baseball did back in, was that 2012? Yeah. 2012, when they implemented this one-game wild card playoff game. I both love and hate what they did with it. I hate it because, you know, you play three-game series, minimum two-game series all year, and now all of a sudden you get to the end where literally everything is on the line, and now you have to play a sudden-death, do-or-die game when you've never played that all year. But they did it because they wanted to recreate the drama and the mystique that happened to close out the 2011 season, which was fantastic for baseball. But the more you try and recreate something, the more it loses its nostalgia and its effect. So I hate that we have these wild cards where it all comes down to one game. But at the same time, there's an element about it that I like because it places so much more emphasis on winning your division. So you know, you have a point that whoever loses the NL West crown, be it the Dodgers or the Giants, they're going to get in. They're 13 and a half games up on Cincinnati, who is in the second wild card spot right now. They're not getting, like, one of those teams will get in. But here's the thing. If it comes down to the last day and the Dodgers lose a heartbreaker to, well, actually, let me look ahead at the schedule here real quick. And who do they play each other? And is there any way that the schedule makers put them as the last game against each other? That would be absolutely perfect. They did not. So, you know, say the Giants lose a heartbreaker to San Diego in the last day of the season, and that's what ends up costing them the NL West crown. And now they have to go and play, let's say, Cincinnati or, you know, St. Louis, I'm with you. It doesn't make sense. Like, there's nothing about them that screams they should make the playoffs, but they're 2.5 out. Or the Phillies, who are 2 out. Or even the Padres right now, who are just a half game back of Cincinnati. Like, the Padres out of that group of four is about the only team that I look at and think that's a good team. They can go deep in the playoffs. Those other three teams, I just kind of look at them like you were saying, and they don't jump off the page at me, but they can win one game. They can knock the Dodgers or the Giants out of that wild card. And then, once you're in the playoffs, weird things happen once you get in the playoffs.
So it's an interesting fun game. I like to, you know, look at with the, you know, who's your spoiler alert, your spoiler is going to be. And if you look at those first teams, so let me do this, Nate. I'm going to look at Atlanta and the Phillies in this list that I've got here of hardest remaining schedules. And this is interesting. The Atlanta Braves have the third easiest remaining schedule, where the Phillies have the easiest remaining schedule with, and again, this is based on tankathon.com, which is actually a very good, interesting website that I like when you're looking at football stuff. But Atlanta's got three against the Giants, four against the Padres, and three against Philly. So those two teams play each other for another full set. But then Atlanta's also playing the Diamondbacks, the Marlins, the Nationals, seven against the Rockies, and three against the Mets. So the Mets, by the way, are just listed as a bad team, but I do think the Mets could wake up any day and decide to do something. The Phillies, however, they face Milwaukee three times, Atlanta three times, like I mentioned, and then they also face the Orioles three times, the Pirates three times, the Marlins six times, the Cubs three times, the Rockies four times, and the Mets three times. So those two teams are really going to make it interesting. I really do. And I think the Mets' remaining schedule is going to take them out of it. I mean, they got eight against the Marlins, five against the Nationals, but the rest of their schedule includes a couple of stints against the Yankees, the Red Sox, Atlanta, Philly, St. Louis, and Milwaukee. So I just think the Mets are done. I just, you know, there's some teams, some franchises, and yeah, I say this as a Jets fan, just some situations, just like it's not, of course, it's not going to work out for them. And that's the Mets right now. So, you know, do you buy into Nate the philosophy that it's a one game lead, say, put yourself in a manager's shoes. You have a one-game lead. You're going into your final series. And this is a one-game lead in the wild card. So if you blow this, you lose home field in that wild card, but you'd still get it. Would you use your – and you've got two games to go. Would you use your ace to guarantee one of those wins and avoid potentially putting you out of the wild card game, but not having that pitcher available for the wild card game? Or would you rather, like, guarantee, come hell or high water, I want my ace out there for that last matchup if it happens? Do you use them and try to get out of it, or do you preserve them and know you've got them, that bullet in your back pocket? I personally – well, I know what my answer is. Let's hear yours.
I think I hold him because at the end of the year, end of the day, I don't win – you don't win any prizes. You don't win any praise. You don't win any glory for getting into the wild card and then losing the wild card game. So – if I'm setting up my staff, I want my ace on the mound for the do-or-die game. And you know what? If we don't get to that do-or-die game, fine, because if I don't have my ace, I'm probably not going to win it anyway. Maybe that's a defeatist attitude to be taking towards it, but I'd rather have my ace on the hill for the wild card and trust the rest of my rotation to get me there and hold on to preserve the one game lead that I'm carrying into the final series. Because then if I can win that wild card, then I can craft my lineup to go and win a 5-game series and then maybe make that run deeper in the playoffs.
So you're really buying hard into the philosophy that you're trying to build for the postseason, which is I'm of the same. I think that's what you do, is you hold on to them, because you can always back yourself into those wins. You know what I mean? But
right.
I don't think it's smart to put a guy out there and then. I don't want to say hope, but, you know, every pitcher's got a bad day, or every team has those days where they're just not hitting. And that's the worst thing that I think you could have happen is you put out your star pitcher, your Gerrit Cole, if I may, just, you know, from a Yankee fan perspective, and that's one of those days your guys just don't put up 3 or 4 runs. I'd rather put Cole and a couple other pitchers – you know, giving yourself the best chance to win, but also knowing that you'll also have, you know, offense in there one of those days that theoretically should get the job done. I don't know. That's my philosophy. So I'm glad we agree on that. It doesn't make for great radio, but I always wonder if you're a manager, right? Do you work with your GM on these things, you know, or do you try to manage it game by game? I don't know. Putting your if you were a manager hat on, what would your preference be? Would you want to just build it based on a feel, or do you want a whole bunch of analytics? And again, strictly one game like situation. Would you want to get every stat you've got? Because there comes a point, and you know this, Nate, I'm a data analyst. I love my numbers, but I think something like that is certainly a feel situation.
Yeah, you know, I really want, if I'm the manager, I want my GM to butt out of that conversation. I want to have my manager be the one making lineup decisions. I want my manager being the one making the in-game decisions. The way I look at it, the GM's role is to hire the coaching staff, put the manager in place. GM's role is to put the roster together, give me my 26 guys that I'm going into battle with, and then after that, the GM should be hands-off, and every decision made on the field, every lineup construction decision, every pitching change, every pitching start needs to be made by the manager and the manager alone. I think that there's benefit to be had in a GM giving a manager all the data and all the information to inform his decisions, but at the end of the day, it needs to be the manager making that call. I don't want the GM anywhere near that call.
Okay. But, I mean, if you're an analytically based team, doesn't that mean you're taking away something that has helped get you there? You know, it's like the whole, you know, you can't turn your back to the girl that you brought to the dance kind of thing.
I don't think so, because you can still, the manager can still make it with the analytics, because the analytics in, presumably went into the construction of the roster to put together the guys to make the decision about.
Okay, but hold on. So you're saying that you're going into that last game, as you put it, going into battle with those 26 guys, that you're going to have all hands on deck, of course. That's inarguable. You're always going to, you know, use every last resource, as we've infamously seen, you know, I forgot who got the start. I think it was Randy Johnson getting the start and Curt Schilling coming out of the bullpen. But you'll see those type things. Madison Bumgarner just putting a franchise on his back. But we're not talking about specifically within the playoffs. I'm just talking about that one game. And that one game, I just don't see a team or a franchise going as all in for that one game, which, you know, in some ways feels a little silly, because I would imagine, I'm surprised we don't really see teams do things quite that dramatically, unless they're down or it's a tie game, in that in that tight spot. But I'm sorry. I think you just got to put everything out there. You have to be willing. I think the way I would say it is you have to be willing to put your best two starters out there for some combination of six innings each. And it sounds great, but you almost want to force the other team to have to play a 12-inning game. I guess it also somewhat depends on the franchise. I'm thinking if you're a team that's traditionally good offensively, you're going to trust that a lot more.
Yeah, but I mean, this whole question started with, do I want my GM making the call or the manager making the call, didn't it? And if you're the if you're the GM and you don't trust the manager to make the best decision, why have the manager? Why not just let the GM
be the manager too? Okay,
be both.
Well, it's a combination. You can't just have it be one of. It can't just be one guy. It can't just be a. I don't know. I don't think. And maybe this is just the way the Yankees have done it, certainly, but it feels like every managerial decision the Yankees have made, whether it comes to a player that they acquire or the lineup that they put out there, those are both done in tandem manager and GM, with a lot of it being the GM saying, I'm going to hand you a bunch of numbers that tell you you need to do this to be successful. And I think the reason Aaron Boone got the job is because he's like, I will trust the numbers, but if I really feel against something, then I'll say it. And I think you wouldn't want to hire a manager who's like, whatever the spreadsheet tells me, I'll do it. I mean, that's just not how that's not how you do business in any business. I've always thought this, Nate, I think you'll appreciate this. I heard somebody say a few years ago, that's the funny thing about being president in America right now is that's the job that nobody wants. And the people who do want to be president probably shouldn't, and the people who want to be president probably, people who don't want to be president probably should. And I feel similar with, the statistics. The people who really rely on the statistics probably should lean off of them a little bit. The teams that are all in on the statistics, so that's what I feel about, the Yankees. I always go back to them, but I think their roster construction is a little over statistical. You'll notice when some of their players started coming back, they started losing. But when they had a group of guys who just kind of went out there and played ball, they did fine. So I think you have to have the GM's packet of data and information there, and you have to take it with, I'm not going to say a grain of salt. You have to take it as this is what you do. This is your guide. But if you need to deviate a little because your soul tells you to put Edgar Martinez out there as your leadoff hitter, then by God, do it.
I think we agree on that point, actually. Like, maybe we're just talking past each other on how we say it, or maybe I want a little bit firmer delineation on it. Like, I don't want the GM really interfering with my in-game decisions. I want him to provide the data, sure, but like, don't be telling. And okay, you're looking at it from the Yankees perspective. I'm looking at it from the Mike Elias, Brandon Hyde perspective. And, is Brandon Hyde running out there and pulling his starter at 4 2/3 innings every night because they're just that bad? Or is he doing it because that's what Mike Elias is telling him to do? Is he doing it because the stats are telling him to do that? Or is he doing it because of a combination of all three? And I'm really hoping that I'm hoping at worst that it's just this. The metrics are saying this guy needs to come out at 4 2/3, and I'm hoping that it's influenced by the fact that the Orioles pitchers just simply can't go more than 4 2/3.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that it's not Mike Elias like getting on the bullpen phone or the dugout phone and be like, "Hey, time to go get this guy." Like, I really, really hope that he's just way backed off. And I have a little bit of faith that that is the case, because there's been a couple of times this season where Brandon Hyde's been asked about some of the prospects that the Orioles had down in the minors who are doing really well, and Brandon Hyde's response is, "Yeah, I know nothing about him because he's not on the 26-man roster that I'm dealing with up here." So hopefully that means he's focused on the guys he has and relying on Elias to just give him the guys day to day. But hard to tell, and I like the idea of a delineation between GM constructs the roster, manager takes what's constructed and runs with it.
I want to ask you a question. It's going to sound like it's a very circular logic, or a not an appropriate one, but we've seen teams right now, it seems like teams are stacking their relievers, right? It just seems to me the idea of a solid four-man rotation is both come and gone, right? Would you say that's fair, that it just seems like nobody's going hard on the strong four-man rotation front, except for the Dodgers?
You mean basically you're going to have like, well, so you're saying there's three starters you rely to go on six, and then the fourth day, you're probably going with a guy that goes three innings, a guy that goes three innings, and then the fifth day, you're just emptying out the bullpen kind of thing?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, it seems like baseball's moving that way, right?
I think there's definitely a case for that. You definitely have the Tampa Bay Rays are at the forefront of that, and more teams are going that way. The difference being, I think Tampa's been constructed to do that all year, whereas there are other teams that are just kind of looking at it, and because, you know, one guy's hurt, so they're kind of forced into that position. I don't know if there's a whole lot that planned on that coming in.
So my point is, if you look at basketball, right, the NBA, right now everybody in the NBA, or the game in the NBA, is who can shoot a three. Because if you stack threes, you're getting more points possession, and that's effectively the game. You're trying to get the most points per possession. In baseball, if you look at it as a start and similar to a possession, you're trying to effectively get the most outs per possession from your player that's throwing the pitch. But they're also finding that baseball is a game of matchups, and by increasing the number of matchups or winning more numbers of matchups, that will benefit your team. So in basketball, I've always wondered, you know, why doesn't a team just make a team full of gigantic people, because nobody can defend? Now, in basketball, it makes sense, right? It just sounds sort of like a silly thing to say out loud. Hey, why not just put out a bunch of guys who can go, you know, walk up to the basket and score uncontested? Well, because the other team will just go out there and drain you with threes. But if you put a good defensive team of two-point shooters, a group of Joel Embiid, a group of Ben Simmons, if I may, the guy who refused to take refused to shoot a jump shot. But if you just have a team full of guys who can slash inside, put the ball in the bucket, you know, get a high shooting percentage, and just beat the other team like that with just sheer consistent inside driving, you're going to win games. And I think the same could be true in baseball. And that's where I'm going with this is, you know, if a GM out there decides to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to pay a couple of guys who put the ball in play. They're going to be cheap. I don't need to get DJ LeMahieu per se, but if I can get guys who are hitting over 250, because that's going to counter what other teams are constructing, and I'll just get four guys who can give me 6 to 7 innings, and instead of having a huge, you know, bullpen, you instead have guys in your lineup who are matchup nightmares. It takes one team to go all in on that philosophy, and I think the whole sport will flip upside down. And I don't know if we're close to that, Nate, but I think there's a reckoning that may come sometime potentially soon where I think you'll see a team go all in on four starters. Do you think I'm crazy though with that kind of outlook?
I wouldn't say crazy.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, I mean you're basically saying like, what's the next market inefficiency that's going to be exploited? Because for the longest time, you know, the whole concept of Billy Beane and Moneyball was, oh, we can build a team by focusing on base percentage instead of just focusing on RBIs and home runs, because people were paying guys big money for RBIs and home runs. Contracts are getting out of control. And so he went and just started constructing the roster of the guys to just simply get on base. And it worked. Everybody also ignores the fact that they had just a stellar pitching staff in Oakland when that happened. But, yeah, so basically, is the bullpen going to become the next market inefficiency? Maybe. But I think that you see a bunch of guys that are already, you know, teams are already severely overpaying for bullpen arms, and bullpen arms are among the most unreliable commodity year to year, even from game to game.
True.
I mean, let's just look at this year, and again, I'm going to come back to one that's near and dear, close to my heart, because I've witnessed it. At the trade deadline this season, other teams, contenders, were calling in and scouting to the Orioles, and scouting Tanner Scott and Paul Fry, because at the time they were two guys in the back end of the Orioles bullpen that were pretty good. You know, they're both lefties. They both throw in the mid to high 90s. Tanner Scott has no idea where the ball's going when it leaves his hand 9 times out of 10, but to start the year, they were both having great seasons, and so the Orioles were like, yeah, you can have him. Here's the price. Nobody took him, and now Tanner Scott is no longer a guy that you can really trust in the seventh or eighth inning. He's back to being what he was, which is he's going to come out, he's probably going to walk the bases loaded, turn it over to somebody else, and the game's going to get out of control. Paul Fry was so bad that he's been sent back down to AAA. Now, part of that is because he had an ERA of like something like 30 against the Rays and kept getting run out there for like 6 games in a row against the Rays, and that didn't help him. But, you know, that's just an example of how quickly bullpen arms can go backwards on yourself. And another example, Jim Johnson from the 2012 to 2014 Orioles, he was a shutdown closer.
Oh, I remember him.
Yeah, every time he came out on the mound, you knew he was going to get the save. He had 100 saves over the course of 2 years. And then the next year, done. Nobody's heard of him since. In fact, I'm pretty sure he blew a couple of big games for whoever he was pitching for against the Orioles in like 2015 and 2016. Zach Britton, another shutdown guy that was in the Orioles bullpen when they were good for that brief period of time, and now he's kind of a closer in New York, but not really, because you have Aroldis Chapman back. I don't know what his role
right.
is with you guys. What do you use him as?
Just an extra arm in the bullpen, I think is, you know. I you know what? Nothing important.
Right. But you're paying him over $10 million a year to be nothing important.
That's what the Yankees do.
Well, yeah. Look at John Collier's thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to where this topic started. Is bullpen or rotation the next market inefficiency?
Ooh, maybe. I think the next market inefficiency is going to be a guy that maybe he can just – if he can just hold his ERA at 4.5 but keep the pitch count down so that he can just get through innings. Like a guy that's just going to throw strikes and not walk people.
I mean, okay. So not walk people. Throw strikes and not walk people. Okay. I think efficiency in pitching – is one of the most underrated things there is.
Absolutely.
I really do. I know I've told you before, but to me, when I was a kid, and really more in high school, the thing that I would always look at was that pitch count.
Yeah.
I think being able to get a starter out is the most important thing that teams don't do anymore.
I don't know how much I agree with it. I think there are a lot of teams that are constructed to get the starter out. The Rays are definitely a team like that. The Yankees and the Red Sox used to be, but now I think they've kind of fallen into the state of, I'm just going to go up there and I'm going to try and hit the ball 1,000 miles. Houston will run up your pitch count. There's a couple of teams that still do it. And then there are other guys that just, you know, there are pitchers out there that just can't keep their pitch count under control. Keegan Aiken jumps to mind for me, again, from the Baltimore Orioles. Can you tell who I watch more often than anybody else?
Yeah, right.
I don't know that I agree that teams don't work pitch counts. I think they do, and I also think that there are a lot of managers that are way too married to that number on when to pull guys. But part of the reason why they have to be married to it is because pitchers themselves can't be efficient.
Why not?
I think part of it is that there's just too much emphasis on striking everybody out. So you're going out there, you don't want, because we've kind of reoriented pitchers. So instead of being concerned about ERA, which I'm fine with them not being as concerned about ERA, everybody's starting to focus on fielding independent pitching, which is related to ERA, but it's basically what should the pitcher's ERA be if he wasn't relying on his defense behind him to get outs. So, I mean, we could do a whole show just discussing the pros and cons of the FIP stat, but I think because there's so much focus on it now in determining a pitcher's value, because it's more what is this individual worth instead of how does this guy plug into the game to make my team better. So you have more guys focusing on running their strikeout count way up. So instead of just saying, I'm going to let this guy get, like, this guy can put the ball in play because he's going to hit a ground ball to my second baseman, just roll over, and I'm going to get the out quickly. Everybody's like, I got to strike this man out. So there's three pitches instead of one just to get that out. But you're not just going to throw nine pitches to get three outs. You're going to end up nibbling and nibbling and nibbling, and you're going to end up extending at-bats, and then you're going to get the guy that can foul a bunch of balls off. And that's how all of a sudden, instead of having a 15-pitch efficient inning, now you're looking at 25 pitches, 30 pitches to get through one. And so you basically lost an entire inning. I think it's basically what guys are focusing on and what teams are paying for that's driving some of the issues here.
I have to just ask a quick throwaway question. If you're starting a franchise right now, who are you starting with, a pitcher or a hitter?
So basically we're doing we're bringing the team into Montreal, we're doing an expansion draft, and you can literally take any guy off of any current roster. I'm going to take an ace pitcher.
A guy who can only help you.
Yes, because they are so hard to find. Because if I can get an ace and then I want to get my ace on the step. I want to get my ace on the hill, and then I want to have a good defensive catcher. I want a solid glove at shortstop, and I want a speedy guy in center field. Those are ideally what I want if I'm building a franchise from scratch.
Interesting. All right. I don't know. I don't know how much I completely agree with that, but I think I would rather have a guy who would go out there and make an impact every day. Just my opinion.
Take Ohtani.
Yeah, you know what? There you go. Solve both of the problems. Nate, I want to ask you if you have any last things you want to say as we call it a show today.
It's been a great night talking with you, Dave, and talking baseball. Always a great time. To all of our listeners, check out the website. Check out all the other great stuff that the Sports City Shuts are doing. Football season's back. There's all kind of great football content going on, both at the website and on the rest of the podcast. So the website, sportscityshuts.com. I've got one trivia question for you here, Dave, and it's right up your alley, and I expect you to get this. So no pressure, okay?
Mark Sanchez.
No. Before Gerrit Cole, who was the last Yankee pitcher to strike out 15 batters in one game?
Ron Guidry?
Nope. More recent than that.
It's CC maybe? He was never a strikeout guy. Tanaka?
Masahiro Tanaka, 2017.
Wow. I don't remember that. I would have, honestly, I would have guessed Chidmeng Wong before Tanaka.
September 29th, 2017, probably against the Orioles if I was venturing again.
Wow, that was like 30 years ago.
Or four.
All right, everyone. It was a blast doing the show with you, Nate. Always fun. We're going to wrap it up. And just make sure, like Nate said, we've got a whole bunch of cool stuff coming up on the website and a couple shows that are coming up featuring football. But we're on the web at www.sportscitychefs.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Sport City Chefs. Dave and Nate here. We're really excited as we hit this last month of the regular season. Of course, we'll be here throughout the playoffs in case you weren't sure. But make sure you tune in same time, same place next week. And I have said enough for a lifetime. And for the last time, I wish you all a very pleasant good afternoon.
Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman vs. MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Chef. Yeah. Cabin. Taj.
Woo! Connecticut.